Welcome to the Launch University Podcast, turning good intentions into reality in your career, business, and life.
Hello, Launch University Tribe. This is David Farmer, and I'm excited to host another edition of the Launch University Podcast, where we help you take your ideas, turn them into reality so that you can be a difference maker and learn how to sustain that. And I am really excited to be joined today by Monica Lage. I will tell you a little bit about Monica, and then I'll let her fill in the blanks and introduce herself. I met Monica when I was up at Harvard Business School, but let me clarify, I was not attending Harvard Business School. I was visiting Harvard Business School. She was attending, however. In fact, I went to visit a friend and fellow coworker, Michael Lage. And when I got up there, he introduced me to Monica, and Monica hailed from Canada. She had been in consulting with the Boston Consulting Group and was there for grad school. Michael was there for grad school. And they met, and as fate would have it, they ultimately became husband and wife. Monica and Michael then moved out to California, where Michael was working for Facebook, and you were still working with Boston Consulting Group. And then, do you want to add anything to that? Because I got a funny story I want to tell about Michael.
Go for it. I love funny stories about Michael.
Okay, so Michael had worked at Chick-fil-A, I mean, all the way back when he was an intern, I think.
Yeah.
And had this dream about going to Harvard. So I actually have two funny stories. One is, he made a list of all the characteristics that he ultimately wanted in a wife. And then he made the mistake of telling me about that and sharing that with me. Let's just say it was a high bar. So when I met you, I knew you had to be super special because this was a guy that went in with a plan. And I got to say, I respect that. I try to coach my own kids that way. In fact, I wrote them a little kind of blog post and told them, if you want to marry a Maserati, then you cannot date Chevys because Chevys don't just magically turn into Maseratis. Michael was looking for a Maserati and that's what he got.
So that's quite a compliment.
No, it is. Seriously. And then, after Michael finished grad school, you guys went out to the whole Palo Alto Bay Area, and he was working for Facebook, but I knew he wanted to get him back to Chick-fil-A. So one day I just decided I was going to be kind of snarky, and I sent him a text message, and I pretended to be God, which I'm not sure you should do. I'm not advocating that, but I basically said, Michael, this is God. I've decided to bless you. I have great plans for you back at Chick-fil-A. Do you remember this by chance?
I do, you know, and it's funny because things were swirling in our brains about moving back to Atlanta. And so any little thing we would take as a sign that this was the time. So it came at about the right time.
I know. He said, yeah. He said, dude, what happened? He goes, did you know I was talking to Chick-fil-A? And I actually didn't. So it was like unbelievable timing. But at any rate, he ultimately chose to come back to Atlanta, brought you with him back
that's
to Atlanta.
Right.
And so that's been good for, certainly been good for Chick-fil-A. I hope it's been good for you guys,
you know,
too.
Our little secret was that I was the one pushing for Atlanta more than anyone else. I love warm weather. I love the South. And so I was all about it. And so Chick-fil-A was putting a hard sell on me to get me to Atlanta. But little did they know that I was the one trying to get us there first.
All right. So let's kind of tell folks what you're up to these days. Because you came back to Atlanta, still working for Boston Consulting
That's
Group.
Right.
And then you guys are getting ready to crank up a family. Pick up the story and talk about what happened in your life.
Yeah. So I was about to wrap up my two-year commitment with the Boston Consulting Group. They had sponsored me to go to business school, which was a huge blessing. And then so on the back end, I committed to them for 2 years. And so as that was about to wrap up, it really had me thinking about, you know, what's next. And family was a big part of that. I was pregnant with our first daughter, Hannah. And we just moved back to Atlanta, so it was an exciting time for us. And I just felt this tug on my heartstrings that it was also time to pursue something that had been a passion of mine for a long time. And so it actually goes back to a senior project when I was in college. My best friend Alyssa and I were on an entrepreneurial streak. We'd launched several businesses during our senior year. And our latest project was we decided we were going to launch a summer camp on our business school campus. So think Terry College of Business. Most people are probably familiar with that. Similar
University
vibe.
Of Georgia.
University
yeah.
of Georgia. Really nice, welcoming college community. And so there were all these summer camps available on our campus, but there was no business camp. And we felt like that was a huge miss. Why are we teaching kids every other subject, but no business at all. And we had this fantastic business school. So we sat down with the dean and pitched him, and he said, all right, let's do it, and gave us the space. And so we launched this summer camp the summer after we graduated from college. We had 30 kids. We had them launching businesses all over the campus. We called it Break Into Business, and it was total chaos, so much fun, and we just felt like we were onto something. We couldn't get enough. And so Alyssa and I both moved to Toronto, continued on with our jobs. I was at the Boston Consulting Group. She went to Bain, a competitor in the consulting space. But we would take time off every year and go back and run this summer camp. Our colleagues thought we were insane. You know, consulting is hard work. And so to use your vacation time to go run a summer camp was just a weird thing to do. But I think that looking back on it now, that was such a clear sign that it was something more than just a volunteer project. It was just a true passion of ours. We love to teach, and we love to see these kids come alive when they learned about business. So that's how Break Into Business started.
All right. So I want to draw a couple of principles for all of our launchers out there that I'm hearing in that story. First of all, this was born out of passion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you're out there and you've got this thing that's just sort of welling up within you, take note of that. That's passion. You may need to be acting upon that. Then when I hear you talk about pitching the dean, and you probably didn't have it all figured out, but you just said, we got to give this thing a try. I think of that as a form of prototyping.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you probably refined it a little bit over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the other idea that comes out of the story thus far is you did all this while you had other stuff going on. So you, mm-hmm. you were incubating this idea while in school, while working full time. It's not like you had all the time in the world to just sort this out.
Yeah, I would say that's been a theme for me throughout this entire journey. So after we ran that camp on our college campus for a few years, I ultimately decided to go on to business school. And Alyssa started a business in Toronto that has become incredibly successful, called RateHub.ca. And so when I was at business school, I decided I still wanted to be doing this. So I applied for a grant and won $3,000 to run a similar project at Harvard campus. So I had kids coming from a low-income school nearby, launching businesses all over campus, terrorizing the business school students, begging them for money, come buy this, come buy that. It was so much fun. But again, I was bringing it with me on this journey that I was on, but I always found a way to come back to it. And so, yeah, it stuck with me every step of the way. And then really one of the biggest things in California that I missed was I didn't have this opportunity to teach the way that I'd found in my previous endeavors. And so when we came back to Atlanta, it was the first thing that I said I was going to do. And so I was still working full time, and I launched the first camp in Atlanta that summer. I was pregnant.
What summer was that?
It was the summer of 2013.
Okay.
So we just moved here. I was pregnant. I didn't really know anyone. We called on every contact that my husband and I had in the education community in Atlanta to get me into some schools, and really fought hard to scrounge up that first batch of kids for this next pilot program in the Atlanta area.
So talk about what Break Into Business Camp looks like.
Yeah. So the core has really remained the same, which is funny, throughout this entire journey. And I really feel like we hit on something spectacular, even from day one, which is really neat. And so it's really based around and centers around the kids launching real businesses. There are no business plan competitions at Break Into Business. We believe that a business plan is 5% of the journey, you know, and there is so much more to do and learn beyond that. And also, the best way to get kids hooked on business and passionate is to have them out there selling. So during a week at Break Into Business, they come, we put them into little teams, we coach them on how to come up with a great business idea, and then they actually land on one that they'll work on for the rest of the week. They prepare budgets, do tons of promotional work. They're handing out flyers all over the place. They have shirts, posters, social media campaigns, videos. They pitch in a big Shark Tank event midweek. And so we bring in 4 or 5 incredible entrepreneurs and business leaders to come hear them pitch. Our roster over time has become exceptional. These kids are getting top-notch feedback. And then on the fourth day of the week, they actually launch their business. So we put them out there. We set up a business fair. They are swiping credit cards, collecting cash. I mean, it's the real deal. They're making the sales pitch. And they learn so much from that experience.
That's an intense week, all in a week.
All in a week. People are shocked. Our sharks in particular, if they haven't been to Breaking a Business before, they cannot believe that these kids had none of this as of Monday morning. And then they're at a place by Wednesday where they have this amazing buttoned up pitch with prototypes and samples and videos, and they're just all in. And so it's high energy. It's fast paced. We have a big team in order to be able to pull it off in a week. And it's messy. I will say that having kids launch real businesses, I mean, messy in the sense that there's cupcake frosting everywhere all the time, but also in the sense that, you know, it's risky and it's hard to scale and it's tricky when you're having kids launching these real businesses with different ideas every week. You can't put it in a box, but that's really where the magic is.
That's awesome. Give a shout out to some of your sharks because you've built quite a reputation.
Yeah. Oh gosh, there's too many. So David Salyers from Chick-fil-A, we'll start there, was one of the first believers in Breaking a Business and a huge encouragement for me when we moved back to Atlanta. So Breaking a Business probably wouldn't exist without his initial encouragement, and he's been an awesome shark. This past February, we've started to run a big Shark Tank event, kind of the culmination of our entire season, where we'll bring in our five top students to pitch. And so we had some awesome names, Ford Fry.
Ford's been on the podcast. Yeah. Restaurateur.
Alum, launch alum. Dana Spinola, who founded Fabric, the clothing boutique. She is an amazing shark. And she always follows up with our entrepreneurs and gives them more opportunities down the road, which has been really cool. Laura Bento was another one. She founded Good Grit Magazine, which is distributed all over the South. She's a total firecracker and gives such great advice to our entrepreneurs. She's awesome. The list is just so long. I mean, there are so many people who have invested their time in wisdom into these kids.
All right. So I want to talk for a moment about momentum, because it feels like you almost have to start standing still, especially when you move into a new town. Now, you had the idea, you had a chance to give it a go a couple of times elsewhere, but as you referenced a moment ago, you're having to build contacts, find the kids. You have to create momentum. My sense is now you have a lot of momentum. So can you talk a little bit? There are folks, they may not have it right now, and they need it. Can you share a little bit about that journey to kind of get some momentum and how things
so
change
hard.
Once you get going a little bit?
Yeah. It's kind of a necessary evil, those first few weeks or months, but for me, that first year was absolutely the most difficult. You know, I kind of put myself out there and I was going into schools and promoting this camp, taking time off from work, just had a lot going on and wasn't seeing a huge response. And I was really, really discouraged. I remember just sitting on the floor in the office of our new house. We didn't have a lot of furniture. You know, we just moved to the city and telling my husband, this is a bust. This isn't working. I can't even get 10 kids. I just need 10 kids to run this thing this year. And so it's really my husband that pushed me to continue and to keep going. And he was the number one salesperson for me when I was in a place where I just didn't feel like I could sell it still. But he tells stories. He loves to tell the stories about how I would sit at our living room, our dining room table, and make cold calls to parents and try and convince them to send their kids to my business camp. He thinks that's hilarious now. But, you know, that hard work paid off. And that first summer, I hit my low bar of I need 10 kids. And I said, all right, I'm going to do this. 10 kids, here we go. And that was the best decision I could have made. Those 10 kids created so much momentum for Breaking a Business. Their parents became raving fans and opened all of these doors for me all over the city, spread the word about it. The next year, those kids came back and brought their friends. And so we went from 10 to 90.
Wow.
The second year, which was a big jump. And honestly,
that's a huge jump.
Yeah. And could maybe even have gone a bit farther if it wasn't for, you know, I had a baby in between. And so I was trying to balance that new rhythm in my life. But if I hadn't just done it and gone for it with those 10 kids, I never would have got to 90 the next year.
So I'm hearing word of mouth, mm-hmm. you've got folks that become fans that in essence go out and promote on your behalf.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the publicity that you've received as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to other places where, like Catherine's Candles, she went,
yeah.
right?
Is yeah. Tell
that story, because I saw her pitch at a big event, Jeff Schoenberger's
right.
Plywood Presents. She got on stage in front of a big crowd at the Tabernacle in Atlanta, and she did a presentation.
She's my definitely my best promotional tool. She is amazing. Yeah, so Catherine came to a summer camp a couple years ago and started this candle business.
She's how old?
She was 9 at the time. Now she's 11. And she just loved it. She loved making these candles. They did really well. She felt like she was onto something. And so we brought her through into our advanced program, which we run during the year for kids who want to pursue the business idea that they have. And then she pitched in our big Shark Tank called The Final Pitch in February, and she won. She was 10 years old. And so she won $500 in funding and all of these connections. People were buying candles, asking her to speak at events. She was on the news. And so she kind of exploded from there. She's sold 1,000 candles now at $14 a pop.
How about that? Well, you know what I remember? She's at the Tabernacle at Plywood Presents.
Yeah.
There's easily 800 people in the room. And she's got these awesome slides, which I think she colored.
She did. Yeah.
That's what I remember. Like, that is so cool.
Yeah. She's fantastic. And so she's definitely a fun success story from breaking a business. But we just have so many kids with that kind of passion and heart who are going after it. And what we're seeing more and more is that kids are finishing summer camp, but they're not stopping there. They keep going. And that's really the goal, is to push them, you know, get them started, give them the tools, but then support them as they get bigger and better and go farther. It's amazing to see them.
So you're about to head into your busiest time of year, summer, mm-hmm. at the time we're recording this now.
Yeah.
What's Breaking the Business going to look like this summer?
This summer we'll have over 200 kids across 9 summer camps. And
wow.
So every year there's a new challenge that, you know, I try and hurdle over. And so last year it was bringing someone in to run programs that wasn't me. Before that, I'd been there for every second of Breaking a Business existence. And so bringing in a fantastic teacher to actually run programs last year was an exciting step, because it allowed for growth down the road. And so it went really well. And so this summer, the challenge is we'll start running programs in parallel. So now we'll have 2 teachers running at the same time in different locations. So that's an exciting, you know, next endeavor. And then in addition, we have our first licensing partner. So we have this amazing nonprofit called LoveWorks, and they will be running a camp in Norman, Oklahoma.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So all the other camps are going to be in the Atlanta area.
Correct.
So this will be the first
yeah.
one outside of Atlanta.
Yeah, so this is really a pilot program to see how it goes, to truly hand it to somebody with a ton of support and coaching. And I'm actually going to go out there and help them get started and just see how it goes. But it's in good hands. They were the perfect partner for this first endeavor. So
share a little bit about your vision as you look out now.
Yeah, that is a hard question to answer. Any listeners who have ideas, please email them.
Yeah.
That one is something that I've wrestled with really nonstop since this thing has begun. So the summer program grows and will continue to grow. I don't see that kind of slowing down anytime soon. We have tons of white space. We haven't gone north of 285 yet. I mean,
that's the perimeter in Atlanta.
Yeah, we've got a lot of room to grow in Atlanta for sure. And so that will definitely be an ongoing project. But really the question has become, and this is something my board has helped me walk through, what's next? And how do we bring kids into this that aren't in Atlanta or happen to be in Norman, Oklahoma, or, you know, wherever we end up with a licensing partner? And so we're working on an online curriculum that will kind of flow through with our advanced program. But it's not just kids sitting and doing this online, but they actually will have a coach walking with them and giving them feedback every step of the way as they develop this idea. So that will allow us to work with kids that aren't in Atlanta and help coach them through this experience. And so our vision at some point is that our final pitch event will be this huge event with hundreds of kids from all over the country applying to come to Atlanta to pitch at this event. And so curating these entrepreneurs everywhere.
So I want to get into some of the nuts and bolts to help our listeners understand how you've progressed in your journey thus far. For example, you referenced a board just a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get into some of the things you've learned as you've scaled. Did you start with a board?
I didn't.
Okay, when did you figure out, yeah, I need a board?
That's a great question. It was very scrappy initially and still is in a lot of ways. But yeah, I think a big turning point for me was when I started working out of this great shared entrepreneurial community called Plywood People. And I know Jeff, who founded Plywood, has been on the podcast
Jeff
before.
Schinnerberger, yep.
Jeff Schinnerberger, he's been a huge part of the Breaking a Business story along the way. But that was a big step for me as an entrepreneur to commit to, you know, paying to go work in office space and having somewhere to go and having my work feel very separate from my home life in a totally new way. It was a very, very healthy and exciting step, but it also opened my eyes to what other people were doing in their businesses and nonprofits that were best in class. And it really gave me some good ideas on what I needed to implement. And the first thing Jeff pushed me hard on was my board, which was pretty much non-existent at that point. And so I've worked really hard over the past couple of years to continue to add to that group. We're up to 6 now, plus myself, and they're really, really committed. I can send them text messages and emails on a day-to-day basis, and they will respond, and they are all in. So it feels all of a sudden like I'm not completely by myself, even when I don't have a ton of employees during the year.
So I remember a little of this time period, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like you have to wrestle with this idea, am I willing to take on some more risk? Because if I move into this place, it doesn't cost me anything to operate out of my home, but if I move into this place, I'm taking on another financial obligation, so I'm upping the ante a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a potential payoff. I'm going to be engaging with people on a regular basis that I might not be having the opportunity to spend time with if I'm operating out of my home. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's right. And David, if I ever write a book, I think it's going to be called The Risk-Averse Entrepreneur. I skew way, way, way risk-averse, especially as compared to a typical entrepreneur profile. And so I think you'll see that in my story where every time I was launching Breaking a Business, I was working full-time and launching this. And so I always had that fallback. And I didn't really take the plunge to pursue it full-time until I had completely tested the idea and run that summer with 90 kids and felt like, okay, this is go time. But on a similar path was, hey, when is it time for me to actually invest and start going and working outside of my home? And so that felt like a really big financial burden at the time. You know, over time as it's grown, it's obviously become less of an issue. But I think a lot of entrepreneurs have to take that step before they're potentially ready for it and just trust. And so as they do that, I would encourage them to really think about what community are they entering into and who are they going to be working alongside and will they get the benefit of being able to tap into other people's expertise? What kind of, you know, working lunches or social events exist in that type of community? Plywood does a great job of really fostering that amongst the 10 or so entrepreneurs that work there. It's a very small and tight-knit community. And so it feels sometimes like I've got 10 additional Breaking a Business employees because they know everything that's going on in my business. They'll drop everything and help if I need help, and vice versa. So it's been a really special place.
I think that's a huge lesson, that there are going to be moments where you have to take a calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do it, you know, just without any thoughtfulness behind it. But in your case, the relationships, those were the payoff.
Absolutely.
Really. And just, I don't know, sense of community, coaching that you got from mm-hmm. Jeff and others. So that's big. You talked about having to add some staff.
Mm-hmm.
Another crossroads?
Huge. That's been, you know, and that's one that I really feel like I'm still growing in and learning. So the way that it's worked is in the summer, my team ramps up a ton because we're running these programs. So historically, I've had 4 college interns and then one kind of teacher to run the program. And then I'll sit over top of this whole thing and make sure that everything's going okay. This summer, we'll be up to 10. So we'll have a staff of 10, which is just a lot to coordinate, hire, interview, manage. That's a big undertaking. And then I've had one part-time employee through the year to help run classroom programs and just all the different things that are going on during the year. But for the first time, really in the last month, I've started to feel like I just need something more. I need a partner in this in a way that I just hadn't craved as much in the past, I would say. You know, I'd always thought, oh, it'd be nice. But now with everything that's going on with Breaking New Business and how it's on the right on the edge of growth, I really felt like I needed someone to come in who could run with things in an entirely different way. And so I actually recently just made a big hire with someone that I can't afford. He's going to come in, but fortunately she's willing to kind of work with me. She's excited. She's passionate. And that shows that it's the right person as well. But I have so much confidence that she's going to run with things in an entirely new way and pay for herself quickly. But this is an entirely new example of a calculated risk where you bring on someone of a higher, totally high caliber and just trust that they're going to create a ton of value for the organization.
And my bet is that in the midst of trying to wrestle with the decision, am I ready to do this or not? You're going to your board, you're seeking counsel from those who know you, who you trust. You're not just making this decision on a whim.
No. Yeah, absolutely. It's my board. I mean, maybe I'm a high maintenance entrepreneur because I feel like I have a lot of support systems scattered in my life. My family is a big one. My husband weighs in on a lot of these things. He's been with Breaking the Business from day one. He knows what's going on. And so I really value his counsel on that. My board, absolutely. I have a community of dear moms who are also, for the most part, entrepreneurs. And so we're constantly wrestling with the same kind of trade-offs and things that, you know, you just look at things in a totally different light as an entrepreneur who's also trying to be a mom.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah, a lot of times at the same time. So.
Yeah, that's a great issue because I know we've got moms out there mm-hmm. who have big ideas.
Yeah.
How do you manage that now? I know you're not full-time, but you're not with Boston Consulting Group anymore.
Right.
So, but you're still trying to raise kids, be a wife, take care of everything related to your home, and then operate and grow, breaking a business.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's the biggest gift I've ever received in my life and the most challenging thing I've ever done in my life. So to have this career that I've kind of created for myself where I can pay myself and kind of choose my own hours for the most part, do what I love to do. I mean, it's incredible. And it provides a whole lot of freedom to be home. So on average, I work about 20 hours a week during the year. And so I'm home with my girls 2 full days at least. And so that is so exciting.
Is that true in the summer too?
Less. I'm home less in the summer. Yeah.
So you know there's some seasonality to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it fluctuates during the year as well. That's kind of an average. And so it's fantastic. And it's such a gift. But my darkest and most difficult moments have come when I'm facing those difficult trade-offs and decisions about what comes first. And it feels like it should be really black and white. Kids always come first. But what about the days when you've booked a podcast with David Farmer and you've got on his, you know, packed schedule and your daughter wakes up really, really sick? You know, and that is an actual example
that
of what happened.
That's just real life.
A couple months ago. And so, you know, walking through when are the times when I call on my source of support in terms of my mother-in-law and childcare to help cover some of those gaps? And when do I need to just prioritize and step away and be there? And so that's been a journey and it's ongoing. One of the biggest things that I have learned and developed a lot since I started this journey, when I first started Breaking a Business, I tried to do a lot of both at once. So it would be home with my daughter and checking emails and, oh, while she naps, I'll make this phone call. Oh, but she didn't nap. And so now I'm frustrated. She's tired. No one's happy. It just wasn't healthy for me. I didn't feel like it was healthy for our family. And so over time, what I've really become strict on is compartmentalizing. So these are my work hours and these are my home hours. And when I'm home, I go into my phone and I turn off my work email. I can't have the temptation. I can't, because if I see an email that I really want to respond to, but I'm tied up with the girls, it just weighs on me and it drives me crazy. And so I try and maintain as much separation as I can during the week.
You know, as I study that topic, the whole concept of multitasking, I've heard people that get into brain science say, you really are not at your best when you're trying to multitask. And so I use the term blocks. I try to create mm-hmm. blocks on my calendar to do exactly what you're talking about. Focus on this thing for a period of time, even if I don't finish it, but I'm going to put, you know, an hour and a half into it. Then go back and check email.
Right.
Then focus on the next thing. And you're suggesting that's helped you.
Has helped a ton.
Okay, great tip there.
Yeah, and for moms just getting started, that's another one. You know, we talked about investing in office space, investing in employees, where it feels like a big financial burden to go for it. And childcare is another one. In those early days when you're maybe not generating a ton of revenue, to pay for childcare is really, really hard as a beginning entrepreneur. But, you know, what I encourage the moms coming behind me, I sit down with moms all the time, starting all kinds of different businesses. And my first thing I'll coach them is create some kind of set working space for yourself. Even if it's 3 or 4 hours a week, at least you know that it's there and you can work towards it and, you know, have that one piece of time because you'll... It's just not healthy to try and do everything all the time.
I love that. I know things pop up and you just have to deviate from the plan sometimes, mm-hmm. just like the day you woke up and your daughter's sick. But I think when you have that plan going in, the likelihood that you're going to get done what you need to get done is just way up. So I want to ask you, as you think back on tools or resources that have been most helpful to you over these last several years as you've launched and grown Break Into Business, what are the things that come to mind that you think might help our listeners?
That is a great, great question.
Like a board. You said a board as an example.
Yeah, a board is a huge one for sure. But then also trying to curate amongst your raving fans and your customer base, something that I wouldn't call a board, but an advisory panel of some sort.
Yeah.
And so I have, you know, a group of customers who are parents who have sent their kids to Break Into Business over and over and over again, who tell their friends about it. And they're fantastic. And I, you know, I'm not shy about reaching out to them to say, I'm thinking about this or I'm planning this. What are your thoughts? What's your feedback? And, you know, it's so easy for me to tell my kids, my students, to go do market research. But sometimes when it comes down to yourself, you find that you're not taking your own medicine. You've got this idea, you just want to run with it. But actually finding those groups of customers that you can reach out to is a huge, huge asset along the way. And then from a, you know, technology perspective, there are certain things as well, just in terms of, you know, Squarespace is amazing. You can build this beautiful website in a day, low cost. It's just all of these things that are coming online now help entrepreneurs in a big way.
Because I'm assuming you have to do things that you weren't necessarily trained to do because there's like nobody else to do it, right? So,
oh my gosh, everything. You know, sadly, Harvard Business School doesn't teach you how to build your own website in a day.
There's no case on that, huh?
File your own taxes. I file my own taxes still for Breaking a Business. You know, find accounting software, find payroll software, figure out payroll taxes. There's a lot.
I love that because that is so real.
Oh my gosh. It can be overwhelming. But again, that's where having that community. So my plywood peeps are the ones where you turn around and say, hey, what do you use for payroll? And for the most part, someone has been on that same journey and you can save yourself so much time by picking someone's brain before you try and figure it all out yourself.
Okay, that's good. So encouragement to those of you that feel like you're drowning in all that stuff you didn't sign up for, but you have to do it or you're going to get in trouble. And I'm here, find folks who are a little bit ahead of you on the journey and they can save you time and maybe keep you from stepping in some stump hole along the way.
Yeah, so buy them donuts.
There you go.
Lunch, figure out what coffee they like.
There you go. That's good advice right there. Well, if people want to learn more about Break Into Business, how can they do that, Monica?
The easiest way is to visit our website, www.breakintobusiness, breakintobusiness.com, and check out what we're up to. We'll have summer camps running all over Atlanta this summer. And so if you're someone who would be a great shark, you know, reach out. We're always looking for fun folks to pour in with our kids and encourage them.
And the ideal age of kids to plug into Break Into Business is what?
Our core has been 9 to 14, but we've had so many kids now graduate and want to stay connected that we've added programs. So we're 9 to 17 now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you're going to have two budding entrepreneurs in your own family. Yeah. They're not that far away from,
I hope so.
From jumping in. I bet they're going to be off the chart good at this. Well, I'm excited just to see how you're growing. I love seeing somebody that has a passion to help others, really, and mm-hmm. to share and teach out of your own strength. So I'm pumped about it, and glad that others are hearing your story, they're plugging in, their own kids are getting to learn from you as well. So we wish you the very best as you have another big summer coming up here in 2017.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for taking the time to be with us. And so again, thank you for joining us on this episode of Launch University Podcast. Feel free to go to the website, and if you've got questions or want to share feedback, we'd love to hear from you. If you get a chance to actually go rate the podcast, perhaps on iTunes, we'd love that as well. But thanks for spending a little bit of time with us and just being part of the Launch University community. Hope you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Launch University podcast. We hope it's helped move you from go-getter to difference maker. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. Find more great resources at launchu.net.